It's time!
You're listening to Pound for Pound, ringside for all things MMA and boxing on WFUV Sports.
Hey, and welcome to the inaugural episode of Pound for Pound. I'm your A-host, Andrew Canary. And we are really excited to start this podcast off here at WFUV Sports. I've been trying to get this started for a long time, so I'm glad we can finally get started. And there's not a better time that we could have gotten it started, honestly, with UFC 280 in the books and a ton of good fights this weekend. We got a ton to talk about. I'm here with my B and C host, Gokul Perugu, and Danny Scott. How are you guys doing? I'll go to you first, Gokul.
I'm doing all right. I mean, We're on the tail end of midterms, and we're a couple weeks away from Thanksgiving, so I would definitely say I'm really excited.
Yeah, definitely. Danny, how are you doing?
You know, I'm doing really good. It's been kind of a crazy week for me. It's going to be a busy weekend, but getting to watch some UFC, you know, the people I wanted to win didn't exactly win. TJ Dillashaw, a guy that went to my high school, so I have a very, very strong affinity for TJ. He kind of got pummeled, and I know the pain of dislocating a shoulder. It's not exactly the best thing, but we'll get into that. It should be a fun episode. An inaugural episode is going to be awesome.
Oh, it's going to be very, very fun, and we will talk about that fight later on. There's a lot of stuff to talk about with that shoulder dislocation, where he's going to go from here, but I figure let's start with a UFC 280 recap. We're going to start with some of the best prelims here. The first one is Bilal Muhammad going up against Sean Brady, outpacing Sean Brady. Bilal managed to get the better. He was cornered by Khabib on his way to a second round TKO. Honestly, I really, really love this fight. And anybody that really knows Bilal Muhammad, he's had kind of a storied past in the UFC. He's had some problems with boring fights, fans not really loving the way that he fights, really, really grappling heavy. And then, of course, he had that problem with the Leon Edwards fight where he ended up getting eye-poked and disqualified, which totally ruined some of his momentum in the topper ends of the division. But this is a big win for Bilal and a really huge statement in the welterweight division. What do you guys think about this fight? I'll go to you first, Gokul.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things you mentioned before was just how, you know, Bilal, his fights were criticized as not as, you know, exciting and just, you know, I guess you know how UFC fans can get when fights can be slow. They can get really, really loud. And this time, I mean, looks like he came out with, like, aggression. I mean, you saw the amount of punches he landed. And obviously, they got, what, he got the second round TKO stoppage. Yeah. So I think you could tell this time he was really coming with a certain level of conviction. And, I mean, I know he's, I mean, he's what, 22-3 now?
Yeah.
And I guess with age, it's very relative based on the fighter. But, you know, I would honestly say he's kind of reaching sort of the latter end of his career in terms of his ability, his athleticism and everything. But, I mean, it's amazing to see that this guy is right below Khamzat. I mean, he's number four. So, like I said, I'm excited to see where, you know, maybe if he has, like, one or two shots at potentially the title.
I think now is the time where he's really going to make his drive to the UFC welterweight championship, or at least make an attempt at it, especially stopping such a high prospect in Sean Brady. I mean, people love this guy. He is coming off a fight against Michael Chiesa that he just outclassed him in. Before that, Jake Matthews and Christian Aguilera, he's looked perfect in the octagon. So Bilal just go out there and really make a statement. It was something to see. Danny, what'd you think of the fight, though?
Yeah, so it was just completely outpacing Brady. It's just 209 punches thrown to 118, or strikes thrown, excuse me, and landing at a better clip, 80 to 58. It's just, you know, he went out and he really outpaced him, and that's something that, like you mentioned, the kind of boring fights. I didn't really feel bored with this one. He didn't go for a single takedown and defended off five, so it was a good showing for him.
And it's also an interesting thing, because in the build-up to this fight, the huge storyline was if Bilal would get the better of the wrestling exchanges, or if Brady would. And a lot of times what I see with these wrestling versus wrestling matchups is that it kind of cancels each other out, and then we end up seeing a really great striking match. We saw it with the first Colby Covington-Usman fight, which turned out to be a banger, and even the second one, we saw a little bit more grappling, but there was definitely a strong striking component. So I thought it was a great fight. And where do both of these fighters go from here? I mean, with Bilal, I would personally love to see a Khamzat matchup.
Yeah,
I think Khamzat matchup is right in line. If Khamzat doesn't end up challenging for the belt, which I think Leon Edwards and Usman, they're going to figure out their whole rematch thing. So while the time is, while the iron is hot, you want to strike it with Bilal getting that fight against Khamzat. What do you guys think, though? Do you see any other possible matchups, maybe like a Gilbert Burns, something like that?
I mean, I was going to say, as you're saying, Khamzat, very hot prospect. Given the momentum that Bilal has, right? What, they're right below each other. They're 4-3. And, I mean, especially for Bilal, right? Just as I said, he's extremely hot right now. He's sort of at the latter end of his career. Even a matchup, and if he hypothetically wins, right? Because, like I said, Khamzat, the guy's a monster. If he wins, I feel like that could be such a big win for him.
I would say instant title shot coming
exactly,
out.
Exactly. Instant. Yeah. Like, instant. Not a doubt. So I think that's what I would like to see. And I guess with Sean Brady, it's just like just picking it back up, maybe getting another fight or two, one or two extra wins, move up in the rankings.
Yeah.
And I think he's very capable of that. And I mean, like I said, he can go against any guys. As you're saying, Gilbert Burns.
Yeah.
So maybe we could see that as a matchup. But I think with Bilal, that Bilal Khamzat matchup could be pretty solid if he's not as ambitious.
Danny, do you like that matchup?
Yeah, I think that's good. The only thing I was thinking about is maybe he gets one more under his belt while Usman and Edwards kind of figure it out, because obviously, you know, that's going to be a trilogy. We're going to see that. So I don't know if he wants to necessarily go that big right now while he's waiting for that title shot.
True.
Maybe someone a little lower down in the division, you know, maybe like a Masvidal type of deal where Masvidal is at the end of his career as well. And Muhammad can kind of get there and, you know, get out with a good win against a recognizable name, especially for the people that aren't really into UFC. You know, they see the name Masvidal and recognize it. So that's a big win that may boost some, like, what's the word I'm looking for?
Kind of his stock,
UFC. It would definitely boost some stock. It's kind of an eye popper, you know. Oh, this guy just knocked out Masvidal in the first round. That's a good fight. Why is he not fighting for the title?
Yeah, and then it could totally play into the storyline of his transformation into an exciting fighter. But that is an interesting point that you bring up about a fighter kind of risking their momentum on a big fight too soon and then not working out for them and getting sent down the rankings. Because that actually did happen in the next fight that we're going to talk about, or one of the fighters that we're going to talk about in the next fight, which is Beneil Dariush. Beneil Dariush, back in 2017, I think he experienced two knockouts. The first one was a flying knee against Enzo Barboza. The second was a killer right hand by the work of Alexander Hernandez. And that totally sent him back to the ends of the division. Since then, though, he's been, I believe, 8-0, perfect win streak. And he just went up against Matheus Gamro, a really, really scary dude in the lightweight division. And it was a fantastic fight. I was a really, really big fan of it. Beneil pretty much outclassed Matheus Gamro every chance that he had in terms of grappling, striking. Ended up knocking down Matheus Gamro in the third round. What did you guys think about this fight? I'll go to you first, Danny.
Yeah, it was another kind of like the Beneil matchup. You just kind of way outstruck him. 67 to 38. I think that's just an impressive, when you can separate yourself by that many strikes, and especially you look at the significant strikes, 59 to only 33. I think that's just such a big separation in the on the card, and I think it's an obvious, deserved, unanimous decision for him.
Oh yeah, definitely. Gokul, what do you think?
Yeah, I think as you said, Dariush, very well balanced. I think we saw that balance. I mean, I know there was like this one left that he landed that was loud. I think it was in round three.
Yeah.
You could tell. I mean, it had some power behind it. And I think he was on a 6 or 7 fight win streak now, which makes it like eight.
Yeah.
So, I mean, talk about getting on a hot streak. I mean, actually, was this the Tony Ferguson fight where I remember, was this the one where it was like the kick? I think it was like in the axe kick or whatever.
Yeah.
That got him clean and he was like on the floor. Was that?
That was against Michael Chandler. But okay. Beneil Dariush did actually end up fighting Tony Ferguson. Yeah. And similar to the Gamero fight that we just saw.
Right.
Beneil just looked perfect. I mean, Ferguson, I think we've kind of all come to agree that he's fading a little bit more now in his later half of his career, which is really sad as a big Ferguson fan. But despite that, though, Beneil's looked amazing. And honestly, it begs the question, does he deserve a title shot after this fight? I mean, with everything that's going on with lightweight and how stacked it is, it's kind of hard for him to argue with one. But also with an 8-fight win streak, he's taking on dogs in the division. Like, you know, guys that no one wants to fight, like Gamero. Literally no one would want to fight him.
No.
Does that earn a title shot, do you think?
I think, like I said, with the streak, I think it does. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, when you look at, you know, the general rankings, right, it is a very stacked division. And really, like, I can honestly see anything happen. Like, I know, like, Dustin Poirier, right, he's still, like, up there, ranked up high. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, you know, like I said, he has a ton of stock. So I think this could honestly go, I wouldn't say, like, a title shot maybe is warranted because, like you said, right, it's such a stacked division.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe another fight against even, like, a solid prospect, like a Justin Gaethje, you know, that could be still, you know, I think I would say a relatively big money fight because Justin Gaethje, huge name. So I would say maybe like get one solid fight. And then I feel like once he gets one more solid fight, that should really warrant him to get a fight against Islam Makhachev.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's what I was
the new champion. We'll talk about that in a bit later, which also actually I was thinking about this before our podcast. What would be the possibility of maybe Beneil, instead of trying to get another like a Dustin Poirier or Justin Gaethje, instead to fight Charles Oliveira? Because that could be a direct matchup or a straight highway, you know, straight to a title shot, I think. I personally am a huge fan of that fight. What do you guys think?
I mean, that just sounds fun. Anytime Oliveira gets in the ring, I get excited. Again, a little upset about the loss this weekend. I like Oliveira. I think he's a great fighter. But I do wonder, you know, again, this class is so stacked right now, and I'm not sure if anyone's going to be able to take down Islam after what we just saw him do and how good Oliveira was, and just to get pummeled like that. But we'll talk about that. So, sure, give him a title fight. I still think he's going to get pummeled, though.
Yeah,
that's fair. That's fair. All right, well, moving on to the big three fights that we had. I mean, it was a triumvirate of just amazing fights that we had this past weekend. The first one, Sean O'Malley going up against Piotr Jan. It was an amazing fight that, honestly, surrounding it was a ton of controversy after the fight. Sean O'Malley managed to edge out Piotr Jan in a very close split decision. What did you guys think? Do you think that Sean O'Malley deserves to win? Do you think Piotr Jan edged it out? What do you guys think?
Yeah.
I'll go to you first, Goku.
Yeah. No, so the one thing I will say with Piotr Jan, I was really high on him, especially with, I think the first Aljamain fight. But, I mean, when you look at this fight, right, I think it was one of the things we were discussing, which was just sort of the damage versus control time.
Mm-hmm.
And if you saw, I felt like, Jan, I think it was a very intelligent fight on his hand, right? You know, he was pretty much trying to like control the pace of the fight, whether it was on the ground or wherever, and he was trying to be opportunistic. And clearly, I think when you looked at the numbers, I would say he was better. But at the end of the day, as like damage, it plays a huge role. I mean, there are times where, like I said, O'Malley came back like firing, and he did rock Jan a couple of times. So, Was it fight of the night? I think it was, right?
I think it was, yeah.
Yeah. So, obviously, in terms of the entertainment value, it was fantastic. Mm-hmm. But I would say this was definitely one of those fights where I was on the edge of my seat. But, I mean, even if you looked at it, right, at the end when they announced that Sean O'Malley won, you could tell there was, like, surprise on his face. Like, he was, like, kind of, I should say stunned, but it was kind of obvious.
He was like, he definitely took the win. I mean, he definitely covered up. Like, there was that one split second where he was like, oh, actually, I won.
Exactly.
And you can even see in his corner behind him, Tim Welch, who's his main coach, was like literally cheering, like hugging the guy next to him. So happy. So, I don't know. I mean, I think, personally for me, I think Piotr Jan definitely got the fight. But like you said, what we were talking about earlier brings up an interesting conversation on judging in terms of damage versus control time, because as you can also see in terms of the numbers, I believe Piotr Jan got 6 out of 13 takedowns.
Yeah.
And I think it was north of like 3 minutes of control time. So, I mean, that's not negligible. But, Danny, what do you think about this decision?
Yeah, so the thing with damage versus control time, I think everyone loves to just see more damage. And especially, you know, it's tough to say, like, when you're not in Vegas, which is the UFC capital, everyone there, you know, you're going to have by far the best judges there and everything. So they're really looking at other stuff besides just, oh, that guy looks like his face hurts more than this guy's. Mm-hmm. But I do think, you know, O'Malley, 3 minutes of control time, yeah, it's a lot, but I don't think it's enough where it's like, you're really looking at that and going, oh, so he just completely controlled and dictated the pace of this fight. And another a big thing for me that, if you haven't figured out already, is the significant strikes. He's just, O'Malley really beat him out on that, 84 to only 58 from Jan. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a, I don't know where I would lean towards it. Definitely, I think it was a split decision, and either way it would have gone, I don't think I would have been very upset.
Yeah, and I think fans wouldn't have been happy either way it went, because, I mean, there's definitely a huge fan base for Sean O'Malley, so if he didn't get the decision, the O'Malley fans would have been upset versus the Petr Yan fans, who are upset now that, you know, O'Malley ended up getting the dub. But the main thing that I've been seeing online, especially in like comment posts, saying that people are saying that it's a robbery, which I completely disagree with. I think robberies is a term that should only be really reserved for fights that are so clearly one side and it goes to the other guy that you like you believe that the judges had to be paid for that decision to be a result. I don't think it should be really talked about with fights like this where it's so close. But despite that, honestly, I think that this is one of the best fights on the card. Easily.
Yeah. I think I will say one thing. This should 100% be a rematch. And if anything, this should be a 5-round fight. This could have easily been a 5-round fight. And 3 rounds, I felt like, was just an injustice to, I mean, both of these guys. Like, it was always neck to neck. I think this fight should have definitely been 5 rounds. It would have been, you know, obviously more entertainment value. Mm-hmm. We would have been on the edge of our feet. And I think that's just something that, I mean, it needs to happen. Like, we
I don't think anybody would have complained if it was a 5-round bout. Honestly, I'm not sure why it really wasn't, other than the fact that Sean O'Malley hasn't really gone 5 rounds too much. I don't think he's gone it one time in the UFC, but maybe in one of the smaller organizations that he used to fight for.
Yeah.
So, honestly, I do like that idea of a rematch at 5 rounds to really test where Sean O'Malley is. So if he comes up with a dub, it really validates him as top of the bantamweight division, a real contender. Or it could kind of show that Petr Yan kind of starts to carry away with the fight and he deserves to be at the top versus Sean O'Malley.
Yeah, so I wonder if we would see that rematch after O'Malley gets a title shot. Because I think he deserves a title shot at this point. I mean, 16-1, he's just flown up the rankings over the last year or two. Mm-hmm. And is right now the number one contender. So I think that's a very clear next fight for the title between O'Malley and Sterling. And then I would love to see a title fight, 5-round bout, Jan versus O'Malley to get that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Jan would definitely need another fight to kind of bounce back 100%. From this loss.
Yeah, definitely.
Which I would love to see him robbed of a Shilly fight or maybe even like a Marlon Vera fight, who's coming off that huge knockout of Dominic Cruz where he ended up breaking his nose. One of my favorite knockouts of this year.
Yeah.
Either way, though, huge news for the huge happenings in the bantamweight division. It's really gearing up to a exciting division that honestly I think starts to challenge the lightweight division in terms of how stacked it is and just how exciting it is.
I mean, a couple years ago, this was by far the best division in UFC when you have Dillashaw at his peak, that whole thing with Corey Sandhagen. It was just this is a very I love this class a lot too because they're just small enough where they're so quick and exciting, but they're just big enough where the punches are
really,
they look heavy. It's like, oh, I do not want to take a punch from that guy.
Exactly, yeah. And speaking of TJ Dillashaw, we're going to move on to the co-main event, which was Aljamain Sterling versus DJ Dillashaw, which ended in a second-round TKO. And there's a lot of things that went on during this fight. I know you're a huge fan of TJ Dillashaw, as you said before, Danny, so this one must have been a kind of a tough pill to swallow for you.
Yeah, this one was a stinger, especially with the news of his shoulder and all that stuff. I've watched just about every TJ fight that I can remember, and it was just he didn't look like himself. He really kind of he came out, and it looked like he was kind of babying that shoulder, and that's you can't do that in the UFC, obviously. But it's a tough, definitely a tough pill to swallow, and I'm really interested to see like what his next move is. And in his training, they said he probably dislocated his shoulder 20, 25 times and would just have to get it reset. And I've dislocated my shoulder a couple times, and let me tell you, it is very much not fun. Mm-hmm. So I can't even imagine trying to fight with a dislocated shoulder.
And then having your coach pop it in mid-fight and then going back out for another round. It's insane. And I think that honestly does deserve some credit for TJ Dillashaw. No matter what he did out there, I mean, yeah, he got finished via second round TKO. But still, I mean, to be able to go into the octagon in the first place and at least put on some semblance of performance, I mean, I think it deserves some respect. But despite that, I mean, Aljamain Sterling absolutely manhandled him throughout the entire fight. Sure. And it's interesting to think also, because Dillashaw said after the fight that he's undergoing shoulder surgery. I want to ask you guys, do you think that TJ Dillashaw, is he going to come back to the UFC when he finally recovers? And do you think he's still going to be the same fighter as he used to be when he was going up against like a Cody Garbrandt on his come up to the title?
That's it's very interesting because, you know, he is getting old. I believe he's, what, 36 now? I think that sounds right. But after you start to get into that, like, really up there in age, especially in this division that, you know, you see a Sean O'Malley who's very young right now and up and coming. I could definitely see him making a comeback and maybe fight another fight. However, like, I don't think he'll ever get back to that title contention fight, especially after kind of what we just saw. I mean, it's tough to really look at that one and say that's the best TJ that we're going to see, especially because he was hurt the entire time, his shoulder slipping in and out. Mm-hmm. So I'm not entirely too sure what his next step is. I would love to see him come back and fight, obviously. You know, hometown guy for me. Love watching him fight, but it's tough when you're really up there in age, you're really starting to get these big injuries, especially after the two-year ban that really took a lot of his, you know,
the prime of his career.
Yeah, the last few good years that he would have had. I could definitely see him fighting till around, you know, 40-ish in there. Definitely would be one of the older guys, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see if he is able to kind of translate that. But Gokul, what do you think? Do you think he's going to come back and be the same TJ Dillashaw that we all know?
I think it's as you guys mentioned previously, it does come down to the extent of the shoulder injury, especially with, like I said, in the sport like the UFC, it is a very sensitive sport. So I think I would say it really comes down to how his recovery is, and definitely no. I think it would take a lot. Like, it would be one heck of a comeback story if he if he even were to get a title shot. I mean, as Danny was saying, I mean, he's 36. Like, it takes a lot for a guy that's pretty much at the telltale end of his career to get back up. But, I mean, I think I can see him, like, you know, maybe picking up a couple fights and sort of, because what, I think he's, what, ranked number 5 now? So, like, obviously that's going to decrease over time when he doesn't fight. But I think if he maybe gets, like, puts on, or if he decides to even come back, if he, you know, fights some guys, like a Dominic Cruz or a Pedro Munhoz, I think there's, like,
I would personally love a Dominic Cruz matchup, because Dominic Cruz is coming off that loss against Marlon Vera, which I mentioned earlier. And he was aspiring for another title shot. He actually, I think still till this date, he's a former two-time bantamweight champion in the UFC. And before his title challenge, where he ended up losing against Cejudo, I think it was back like maybe a year or two now, he put preemptively 3 times UFC bantamweight champion. Wow. Still hasn't taken it off to this day, I don't think.
I like
so
that.
So he is confident that he's going to make his way back to this belt. I mean, obviously, huge setback, but I think eventually when TJ comes back, I would personally love that fight, because TJ, it would be a rematch of their first fight, which TJ ended up losing the belt to Dominic Cruz in the first place.
Right.
But
the one other thing that I would love to see is another Cody Garbrandt rematch.
Just
because
of
how much they hate each other, that whole rivalry and everything, coming up in the industry kind of together, that may be a good fight for TJ to kind of get back on his feet. And you don't have to, it would be like one of the lower main card fights, but I still think that would be exciting, especially with the storyline for people.
Yeah, definitely throw it on like one of the first or two fights on the main card, get some name value on there, and also it would, by relation, really show where Garbrandt is at this point, because he's also kind of sputtered out in the last couple of years as well. But also, before we wrap up this Aljamain Dillashaw segment, I would like to ask you guys, what do you think is next for Aljamain Sterling? I mean, obviously, the media tee-up that I think is Aljamain Sterling versus Sean O'Malley, since O'Malley just came off that massive win.
For sure.
But also, Henry Cejudo is saying that he wants to come back at bantamweight, so there's the possibility of that fight. What do you guys like more out of those two matchups? Do you want to see O'Malley matchup or a Cejudo one? I'll go to you first, Gokul.
Yeah, I think for just maybe if the fans are, I guess if Dana White is really feeling like to put on a fight like that, maybe I think that could produce some entertainment value. I think that's what it's going to come down to at the end of it. But realistically, I think just sort of given the momentum that Aljamain Sterling is sort of experiencing, and like I said, O'Malley too, a meteoric rise, I would say, honestly, I would maybe put like, I would honestly not mind to see another Sean O'Malley and Petr Yan fight that sort of like, you know, confirms, like, yes, decisively, maybe have like a 5-round fight. Let's see who wins that. And if obviously if the win is relatively, if it's like a relatively decisive win where there's not much controversy, then they pretty much can, whoever wins that fight can really challenge Sterling. But I would honestly like to see that alternative, just given the controversy and entertainment value around the Yan and O'Malley fight. But I would say that's probably the kind of series of fights that I would like to see.
Gotcha, Danny. What do you think?
Yeah, I think O'Malley deserves a title fight. However, with that being said, if Cejudo comes back, I think he's instantly the number one contender. We've seen what Cejudo is and what he's done. I mean, when Dillashaw was still the champ, he just pummeled Dillashaw.
I think under 30 seconds TKO was.
Yeah, it was insane. But I think Cejudo instantly comes back and deserves a title fight. Just his legacy and in the mixed martial arts, he's
and also Olympic medalist,
Olympic
too.
Gold medalist. Yeah. Like he instantly comes in, and I think he's the number one contender in this division. So I think he would definitely deserve a title fight. After that, I kind of like what Gokul was saying. Maybe another O'Malley Yan matchup, and make that a co-main event one. All bantamweight matchup. That would be very, very fun.
Oh yeah.
But we'll see. I think Cejudo definitely deserves it if he comes back, but if it's just all kind of words right now, O'Malley definitely is next in line if it's not Cejudo.
Personally, myself, I'm leaning more towards a Cejudo matchup because, personally, I'm also a huge Aljamain Sterling fan. He's our he's our only New York champion, so we got to at least have some respect for him. And if Henry Cejudo does come back and challenge for the belt, that's a huge payday for Aljamain.
Huge.
So at least he gets the bag, even whatever way that fight pans out. But moving on to the main event of this UFC 280 card, it was an absolutely electric fight, something that I've been looking forward to for honestly like months at this point. It was Islam Makhachev versus Charles Oliveira for the lightweight championship of the world. Both guys kind of have a storied past. Charles Oliveira was supposed to be a champion heading into this, but he actually missed weight in his last defense against Justin Gaethje, stripping him of the title. So the title was up for grabs. Whoever came in made weight, obviously, and then won the fight. Obviously, the fight panned out with Islam Makhachev defeating Charles Oliveira via second-round submission after knocking him down in the first place with a nice right check hook. What do you guys think about this fight? It was amazing. For however long it lasted, it was a fairly short fight, but I was loving it every minute.
Yeah, no, I think one of the things, right, because I remember it was kind of like a storyline to it, because I know Khabib's dad, his whole thing was once Khabib retires, Islam is going to sort of pick up where he left off. Sure, it's going to take some time, but he's going to reclaim that crown. I mean, I can't think of a good movie analogy, but you know what I mean, though. It was kind of like the father, like, preordained it in a way. He's like,
yeah, kind of
know.
Like a, I don't know if you guys watched Rocky V at all. It's probably the least popular one out of all of them, but it's like old Rocky, or actually, you know what, better comparison would probably be the Creed movie.
Yes,
I would say.
Yes.
Old Rocky training up the new one. And,
right,
right. Exactly, yeah.
And it reminds me of that, and it's just like, because it's one thing, right? Because you would think it's just, okay, it's a storyline. Oh, it's just a lot of fault, like, you know, kind of hype. But, I mean, Islam, you saw what he did. I mean, sure, I know there's, like, a lot of hate against guys like, you know, Khabib, who just only, like, wrestled a lot. And obviously his dominance was primarily displayed there. But, I mean, you saw Makhachev. I mean, he was, his boxing was elite. I mean, he had a takedown in which he followed up with just pummeled barrages of punches that Oliveira just could not defend. I mean, like I said, Oliver, I mean, he's known for his, like, defense. He's very balanced, and he knows how to, like, you
and
know.
Also, jiu-jitsu ace. That was the big storyline coming into this fight with Islam Makhachev. If Makhachev gets it to the ground, will he be safe from the submissions of Oliveira? And yeah. It turns out he was. He actually was completely, I mean, except for a couple spotty moments there, I mean, he came out unscathed. So I think that was a big thing. Danny, what did you think about the fight, though?
Yeah,
I want to hear your opinion.
I mean, Makhachev just kind of pummeled him from the get-go. It was, I really don't see anyone in this division currently kind of challenging him for a title fight. I think Oliveira was on top of the hill for so long. I mean, you saw his wins. Gaethje, Poirier, who else did he?
And Michael Chandler. Like effectively cleaned out the division here. So I was really excited going into this fight, seeing if Oliveira ends up beating Makhachev. I think that kind of puts him in the, at least in the top three greatest lightweights of all time. But honestly, I think that kind of might go to Makhachev now.
I mean, yeah. It just felt from the beginning. I was so pumped going into this. I love Charles Oliveira. I think he's a fantastic fighter. And obviously, it was Islam Stern. He just, it really, really felt the entire time like he was just in control of the fight. If you look at some stats from it, I mean, knockdown, 72 total strikes to only 25, 30 significant strikes to 19, 2-3 for takedowns. It really felt like just a complete dominant victory for him.
Yeah, which is something I was honestly really not expecting going in this fight. I thought it was going to be either one, really, really quick, going to be finished right in the first round, or it was going to be something that was like really back and forth. Oliveira has some success, puts Makhachev in a bad position, then vice versa. But honestly, I mean, the Khabib back Islam Makhachev, I mean, I guess I've always seen the videos of Khabib saying, like, Islam is better than me. Islam's like literally Khabib 2.0. And I don't think I really ever believed it. Up until this fight.
Yeah.
I mean, he has the striking. He ended up knocking down Oliveira. He has the wrestling. Managed to steer clear of any submission threats. And, is now the UFC lightweight champion. I mean, what do you guys think, Makhachev, where does he go from here? Obviously, we had the whole post-fight interview where Volkanovski, the featherweight champion of the UFC, ended up coming into the octagon. They had their whole face-off. Do you guys like that fight? And how do you think it would pan out?
I think that would be a... That would be a super fight. Let's be honest. Like, Alexander
Volk. Are you kidding me? He's the number one.
Pound for pound.
Yeah.
Yeah, literally the number one pound for pound guy. Consensus.
Right, right. And I think it's a matter of a when, right? Mm-hmm. It's really just a matter of a when. And I think it's, I mean, if Makhachev, like, what's his record now? Like, 16-1 or is it?
16-1.
16-1 run. Okay, so he's 16-1. Right? And if he were to, hypothetically, get into a matchup with or fight Alexander Volkanovski and wins, that would be, he'll be what, like 17-1 and maybe ranked as...
I'm actually wrong. He is 23-1. He actually does have a couple more fights under his belt, but either way, though, your point still stands, honestly.
Yeah, yeah. Like, he would be probably considered as one of the... He would be in the conversation as one of the greatest or lightweights of all time. I think it's kind of like what happened with, what's his... Kamaru Usman. I think if you just sort of... has a couple of fights and just sort of clean sweeps the division like once or twice, that would like really solidify his position as a pound for pound, you know, number one overall. So I would say that's probably the, I think that's just, that's going to, it's going to happen.
Yeah. Danny, what do you think about that fight?
I think Volkanovski is starting to get bored in featherweight.
Yeah.
he's cleaned house. When Max Holloway is still the number one contender and we've already seen what that fight was.
That fight pan out three times.
Yeah, I think he's starting to get bored and is going, you know, I want to fight, I want to test, and I think that's a good test for him.
Yeah, talk about a test. I mean, going up 10 pounds against probably the consensus scariest guy at lightweight, I would say right now. No one's unless if you want the belt, no one's asking for a fight with Makhachev, and even before then.
There's an argument that he may be the scariest fighter right now. Like, that a big Russian dude, just that's scary.
Yeah,
it is.
But I would love to see that fight. I think Volkanovski, obviously, fantastic fighter, number one pound for pound. And they have Islam at number three right now, according to the website. So that would be just a star-studded matchup. I think that would be very, very fun.
Yeah, no, definitely. And to end out this segment on the lightweight championship, where do you think Oliveira goes from here? I don't think it was a terrible showing for Oliveira, but definitely... It wasn't the Oliveira that I think I saw with the Poirier fight, the Gaethje fight, the one that I really fell in love with, where, yeah, he was reckless, but he also had the technical skills to really get him out of those bad situations. So I'm trying to think of a couple of matchups coming out of this fight, and the main one, which I kind of mentioned earlier, was the Dariush fight, the Beneil Dariush fight. I think that's an amazing fight, honestly. What do you guys think? Do you see any other possible matchups?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Gokul.
Yeah. Islam, like I said, he's dominance, pure dominance. I think at the position he's standing, Oliveira, there's really no point of trying to do a rematch. I think for him to really even get another title shot, yes, it's going to have to maybe fighting like a hot prospect like Beneil, a Dariush, or, you know, maybe even having another fight or having a fight with Justin Gaethje. I think it's, like I said, given how dominant Islam is, it's going to be Oliveira just having to take these fights with relatively, you know, I would say like high position contenders. And like I said, having two or three fights. And then maybe if Makhachev is still there, have another fight. But just given the dominance of Makhachev, I think Oliveira for the next two or three fights takes, you know, a couple of, I should say lower end fights, still high quality fights.
Yeah, still top five, top 10.
Exactly.
You know, weight class or ranked fights, but exactly. Still not those championship level fights.
Not yet, no.
Dang,
yeah,
what do you think?
I think the Dariush makes the most sense in my head. I wouldn't mind seeing another Gaethje matchup. That's just such a star-studded headliner.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was an electric fight, honestly, last time it happened. So
it was awesome. So I could definitely see that. And I think Gaethje's trying to get back up to that number one contender, get another title fight. And there's not really a better person in the division than to fight Oliveira to get that title shot. But I do think Dariush makes the most sense. Fight a kind of young up-and-comer and show everyone why you're Charles Oliveira.
Yeah, definitely a good bounce back fight. But shifting gears from UFC 280, amazing event. I loved it personally. I know you guys definitely enjoyed it as well. We have some big fights this weekend in terms of celebrity boxing and also UFC fight night. We're going to start with the fight night first, just the main event. I want to get your guys' kind of preliminary thoughts on it. What do you guys think is going to happen? The fight is Calvin Kattar versus Arnold Allen in the featherweight division. Calvin Kattar is currently coming off a loss against Josh Emmett. It was a close fight, but Calvin Kattar definitely came on the wrong side of it versus Arnold Allen, who has been electric. People in Britain love him. He's a British-based fighter. His last time out, he stopped Dan Hooker underneath 3 minutes. And I think the year before, he beat Sadiq Youssef, another rising up-and-comer in that featherweight division. How do you guys see this matchup stacking up for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I know Arnold Allen, he's, you know, slightly favored for this fight, I think. I think that's what Vegas says. And, I mean, if you look at it, right, it's in terms of his takedown, I think he has like a 50, it's like a 1.41 takedown, I think it's like a 50% accuracy. So, clearly, in terms of on the ground, the guy is very solidified. And I think his last fight, it was a TKO against Dan Hooker, right? As you're saying?
Yeah, underneath 3 minutes, yeah.
Right, exactly. So I would probably say, I think Arnold Allen, just given the momentum, I mean, he's 18-1, and just given how solidified he is, and like I said, and also his striking accuracy too, the amount of significant strikes he lands per minute, I mean, he's very well balanced, and I think he's kind of has the momentum going for him. So I would probably, it'll definitely be a close fight, I think. But I think the age and, you know, the sort of just...
Yeah, statistical balance, output. Yeah.
Exactly, the balance will give Allen the slight edge.
Yeah, I think Arnold Allen is definitely part of, like, this new school of UK fighters that we've been seeing in the past couple years, mainly in the Tom Aspinall, who, sadly, I think he tore his ACL in his last outing against Curtis Blades, so he's going to be out for a while. But they all have this similar style of really, really slick striking, mixed with opportunistic wrestling that I love. So personally for myself, I can see Arnold Allen coming away with this and maybe even like I think Calvin Kattar has too tough a chin. I think it's probably going to go all five rounds, but I see Arnold Allen definitely edging out the win in terms of striking output and as well as wrestling as well. But Danny, what do you think about this matchup?
Yeah, I think we're going to go for a little clean sweep on that one. I think Arnold Allen definitely takes it. He's younger, doesn't have the same height or reach, but I think in a weird way, I think sometimes that's better where, you know, you can get more close and personal. So I don't need to add any more than what you guys have already said. I would definitely go with Allen on this one.
Got you. All right. Yeah, it should be an amazing fight. I think that's going on tomorrow. Main card starts around 7 or 8. So make sure you guys watch that. But switching gears to another fight, definitely one that is not as serious, is Jake Paul versus, honestly, kind of the consensus GOAT in MMA, Anderson Silva. There's some controversy surrounding this fight. Obviously, people have their own opinions about Jake Paul as a celebrity and also as a boxer. I have my own opinions about him. But he's going up against Anderson Silva, a guy who's stayed at the top of the UFC for so long to the point where people consider him as great as John Jones, as great as some of the other best MMA fighters of all time. He finally made his transition into boxing. I think his first two fights was against Tito Ortiz, who he absolutely demolished, I think, within a round. And then Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., which any boxing fans out there will know, Julio Cesar Chavez, his father, one of the greatest boxers of all time. And his son, Jr., is no slouch either. And he was able to outclass him over, I believe it was 12 rounds, something like that. So what do you guys think about this fight? Do you think Jake Paul is going to get the dub? What do you think? I mean, Jake Paul's also coming off a fight against Tyron Woodley and Ben Askren, where he's able to knock both of those guys out.
Yeah.
What's your general opinion on this fight?
The age difference, when you talk about age difference, right? Because before, like, they were saying, oh, Jake Paul's like 10 years old. This time, Jake Paul's, what is he, 24?
Something like that.
Yeah. And yeah, Anderson Silva is almost, I think, double his age. So if you talk about age difference, right? That's a crazy, crazy age difference. And I understand, right? Even if you're like the greatest UFC fighter of all time, you could be like 50-0 or 50-1. You could be like a Floyd. Like, age plays, like, in terms of the kind of depreciation effect that it kind of applies, I mean, especially, like, athleticism, it can play a big role. And honestly, I think from, like I said, with Jake Paul, at least the few things I've read, I've heard, like, everyone, his teammates or, like, other people have been saying he's been training really hard, like, he's taking it super seriously. Sure, he might be taking it really seriously in terms of his training, but he's not showing that in terms of the kind of opponents he's taking.
Yeah.
So I think it kind of goes back to, like, him kind of trying to take serious opponents, but in terms of like the fight, I don't know if you said this before, but he got knocked out twice or something like that, so he had to get cleared.
So actually, there is a storyline surrounding this whole fight that Anderson Silva came out yesterday in an interview and said in his last sparring session he actually got knocked out twice. Later in the day, he totally retracted that same statement, saying that was just kind of a loss in translation type thing. Obviously, he's from Brazil, so Portuguese is his primary language. But I find it really, really hard to believe that somebody that's been in MMA and combat sports for 20 years would screw up the word knockout. But that being said, there's also another interesting little wrinkle to this whole fight, with actually a bet being also placed yesterday between Jake Paul and Anderson Silva. What actually happened was Paul bet Silva if he ended up losing this boxing match, he would fight Anderson Silva in a kickboxing match, which obviously is way more predisposed to Silva's skill set as a Muay Thai striker.
Right.
However, if Paul ends up getting the dub tomorrow, him and Silva have to create an organization that's a pro fighters organization that seeks to get better health care and pay for fighters in the UFC. It's a really, really interesting bet. What do you guys think about it?
Yeah, and so obviously, you know, with this whole union idea and everything, that'd be great for the fighters. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's necessarily great for UFC, but I want to see Silva win just because I would love to see Jake Paul get leg kicked. Just see him absolutely crumble when Anderson Silva just rocks that calf.
Or throws a front kick up to the chin, literally anything.
Just a flying knee.
It'd be beautiful.
I would love to see Anderson Silva win just so we can see him get pummeled again. Because that would just be a no contest. I think Jake Paul has done a very, very good job with his brand and everything. And he's made a lot of noise and all this stuff, but you kind of already mentioned it. He's not picking the greatest fights right now. He's picking guys that are washed, that he knows, okay, if I land one good one, which he has that capability, he has the power to do it, if I land that one good one, then it's over. But going against, I mean, Anderson Silva, don't get me wrong, he's definitely up there in age. But if there's one thing that everyone here knows about Anderson Silva, is the guy knows how to fight. So I think Silva, I don't want to like say he wins, because it almost feels like every single one of these are scripted. It's like the new it's the new WWE. Where they're actually throwing punches a little bit now, but I would love to see Silva just rock him.
Definitely. I mean, as an MMA fan and a UFC fan, I would love to see Anderson Silva beat him. But also, I would say you got to put some respect on Jake Paul's name, which I can't believe I'm actually saying that right now, is because as opposed to his brother Logan Paul has no boxing ability whatsoever. I mean, his fight with Floyd Mayweather was embarrassing to watch. I felt embarrassed for him, honestly. Yeah. But Jake Paul, he genuinely actually does know how to use his jab and set up the big right hand. I mean, we saw it time and time again, mainly with the Tyron Woodley fight where he ended up knocking him out, and also with the Nate Robinson fight, which was his first foray in the boxing. In my honest assessment, I hate to say it, I think Jake Paul might get the win, which I literally hate to say because I was saying to my roommates, I was like, you guys might genuinely see me shed a couple genuine tears if Anderson Silva loses tomorrow. But we shall certainly see. Goku, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I'll just say every single time I said, like, Jake Paul, he's probably going to lose this. Like, there's no way he's going to win this. But every single time he's, like, had the cleanest knockouts or he's really he's pretty much displayed his dominance.
So as much himself, as, yeah.
As much as I, like, hate to say this, right, I think this is the first time where I will say, so maybe there's, like, a bit of, like, a reverse psychology thing where, you know, maybe the first time I say Jake Paul is going to win this, he might actually lose, even though I was really trying to wish for him to lose.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm going to say Jake Paul in the hopes that he loses, but also there's a pretty good chance that, I've felt that they've been scripted. I mean, let's be honest. I think every UFC fighter that I think he's fought has gotten paid more than they ever did in the UFC.
Oh, by far.
Yeah.
By far. It's not even close.
Right, exactly. So I think a huge part of it is that, and which I love to see. I mean, I think the idea behind the whole pro fighter organization, I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to come down to, I'm hoping it's a good fight, though. I'm really hoping it's not one of those fights where it's like 3 seconds and boom, knockout.
Yeah.
Like, you know, trying to take it to the distance and make it close.
I do genuinely really want to see how both of these fighters perform, which it's crazy. I'm saying Jake Paul's a fighter.
I really
want to see how Anderson Silva performs in his old age. And also, Jake Paul can really hang with one of, like, the technically best guys in MMA ever. But moving on, we also have one other celebrity boxing match. Well, actually, before we move on, Danny, give your final prediction. What do you think?
Oh,
Jake Paul,
man.
Anderson Silva, who's coming away?
This is kind of a tough one because, you know, we've grown so accustomed to Anderson Silva just being that guy. But Jake Paul, pains me to say as well, Andrew, but I think he is genuinely a good fighter at this point. I think you can say that. I think he's really taken it seriously. So I'm going to go with Jake Paul. I just think he has that enough power where if he lands one good one and has a tough enough chin where we've seen him take a couple of big punches, if he lands that one good one, Silva will go to sleep.
Yeah.
Gotcha. I mean, that's sad to say. I think we're all siding with Jake Paul, which honestly, before this podcast, I was not expecting.
We all want him to lose, but I think we're picking him because it's just how it is.
Yeah,
I think that's the mentality going into this fight. But moving on to the last celebrity boxing match, Uriah Hall, who just came out of retirement to actually accept this fight, is going up against Le'Veon Bell, who's a former football player. I think he played for the
Steelers.
Jets.
Yeah, yep. Steelers and the Jets.
Yep.
Yeah, good running backs, I believe, right?
Yeah.
And in actually his last fight, he has one previous fight before this. He ended up knocking out Adrian Peterson, who's also another football player, another running back, I believe, right? And he's taking a huge step up in competition against an actual fighter, Uriah Hall. He has some of the best knockouts in UFC history. I mean, he has that famous spinning back kick knockout I think everyone's seen. And also another spinning back kick knockout to Gegard Mousasi that led into a flying knee. Some of the best knockouts I've ever seen in my life. But obviously, it's not UFC. He can't use those weapons anymore. He's only restricted to boxing at this point. So I'm not sure how he's going to really perform, given that this is also his first foray in the boxing ever. He never had any amateur bouts, any professional bouts. But what do you guys think about this fight? Who do you think is going to come out on top?
I think it's a matter of just raw experience, like pure. He's a fighter, even though it's in the MMA, he's still a fighter. Mm-hmm. It's going to be pure experience versus just athleticism. I mean, sure, yes, Le'Veon Bell even fought Adrian Peterson, but that doesn't really say anything. It's just it was like a hyped up fight with two big football names. So I think it's going to be an interesting fight. I'm going to be honest. It's a weird fight. I really think it's a weird fight because with some of these celebrity boxing matches, you would think, right, maybe it's like a beef thing that, you know, they settle it, one and done, let's move on with life, let's do something else. But with this, I mean, Le'Veon Bell, I never expected that. I felt like there was kind of a curveball with him. He's like, oh, let me get into boxing. And I guess I will say it's kind of a funny fight, just given how unexpected it was.
Yeah.
It was just like random, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But in terms of prediction, I think Uriah Hall is going to take it because, I said, just pure experience. That's what it's going to come down to. And I think I have no idea. It's either going to be an extra. I feel like it's going to be a very lopsided fight to that goes to Uriah Hall, mm-hmm. or it could be like a really, really long fight that could either go, you know, go mm-hmm. to either person. But I definitely don't see like Le'Veon Bell getting a decisive win. I just feel like it's.
Yeah, it's just, if he wins, it's going to be something weird, I believe. Exactly. Danny, what do you think about this fight?
So, obviously, I'm more so inclined to the football aspect. So, yeah. I've seen Le'Veon Bell run the football for quite a long time, mm-hmm. and I know this dude is just such a pure athlete. Mm-hmm. Where it makes sense where he's transitioning into this world of boxing now. And correct me if I'm wrong, but Uriah Hall was mainly a kickboxer, right?
Mainly a kickboxer, yeah.
So I think that kind of, you know, you take away his strength in that. You mm-hmm. get a guy that, in Le'Veon Bell, who's still fairly young. I believe he's only 30. I can double check
that. Yeah,
he's
30.
Yeah. 30. So, I mean, still fairly young. A little bit bigger than him. He's got another inch, got about 40 pounds. Mm-hmm. I could very easily see, and it's another Jake Paul situation where I just think he's got that power, and mm-hmm. if he lands one punch that's just right on the money, it's going to be a fluky knockout where he just, you know, he sits there and takes it and takes it and takes it, land one, game over.
No, I could definitely see that as well. That's why I'm a little bit nervous going into this, especially since I don't know if you guys have ever seen any of Uriah Hall's fights, but he's notably, he can have some really, really big knockouts and everything like that, but he's also known for being extremely timid in terms of his output. His last fight was actually against Anderson Silva, who we just talked about in the UFC.
Yeah.
And he ended up getting a win over him. But it was a very, very slow fight. It took all the way till the fourth round. That was with everything that is with MMA, such as wrestling, kicking, right. everything like that. So, honestly, I'm excited to see how this fight goes. I think what you were saying, Gokul, where technique and strategy kind of outweigh sheer athleticism.
Yeah.
So I'm leaning more on the side of Uriah Hall, but I'm excited to see how this fight goes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's going to do it for our first episode of Pound for Pound. I want to say thank you to Danny Scott, our producer and C-host. Great job stepping in there last minute.
Yeah.
And also, Gokul, I would like to thank you, too. You were amazing on this episode.
Thank you.
And, yeah, make sure you guys tune into the fights this weekend, and we'll also see you next time on Pound for Pound.